Take note, today's podcast and the topics we're discussing tie into a very special announcement that Brett wants to make on this very podcast. So be sure to stay tuned in till the end to hear Brett's special announcement.
You're listening to the Every Plant Story podcast, where we collect, share, and discover the stories, lessons, and passions behind the people who are always growing more. You're listening to the Every Plant Story podcast, and here is your host, Shane.
Hey guys, and welcome to today's episode of the Every Plant Story podcast. We're so glad you're here. My name is Shane, owner and founder of Gabriella Plants, and with me again, Brett.
Hello, botanist and head grower here at Gabriella Plants.
Brett, it's so good to be back. It's a little rainy, but you know, this set looks amazing, and I know you have some special plants you want to go over today, but what's been up in your world?
Oh, wow. Well, spring has come and gone. It's summer now.
Oh, yeah. No, Florida doesn't really get much spring. We are, and I think we've said that in previous podcast episodes, but it's you have to run the heaters and then you're praying that your air conditioner works. There's really no in between.
And so now it's hot in the greenhouse. Plants are growing, and
that's the upside. We're getting things done. The plants actually do start.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're taking off.
They love it.
I had to tell Hunter, our greenhouse manager, the other day that, like, because he was kind of contemplating, like, do we chop this? Do we not? I was like, listen, you can chop it and come back to the same bad hair day 2 weeks from now.
Yeah,
like,
compared
to winter where you're kind of hoping, you know, everything works out and you have enough for the weeks of work ahead of you. And then you get to summer and everything's out of control.
They won't stop. The plants just go.
Yeah, and they don't understand that we only work 5 days a week or, you know, we take days off. They don't.
Right. Nope,
no, the not at all.
Nope.
Well, I know you have something very near and dear to, you know, to your heart to talk about on today's podcast, but do we want to jump right into that? Or?
Yeah, let's do it. So today we're going to be covering plant taxonomy.
Okay.
So plant taxonomy.
I hate taxes.
No. Not taxes.
Okay.
Taxonomy.
Okay.
So.
I failed Latin.
Plant taxonomy essentially is the naming of plants.
Okay.
So when it comes to the naming of plants, all naming is done by binomial nomenclature, which is a two-named system of naming plants. Okay.
Right.
So this was accredited and kind of first formally attributed to Carl Linnaeus when he wrote his book Species Plantarum in 1753.
Woo, a guy ahead of his time.
Oh yeah, and so at that time, people were using all different names around the world to talk about similar plants. And so because of that, at the time, you know, it was becoming a global industry to discuss plants. He wanted to denote and make one way that people could call one plant a certain thing. That way, whether you were in Russia or you were in somewhere in Europe, you know, if you were talking about one plant, you all used the same name so that you knew you were talking about the same plant. And so it had been happening a little bit before him, but it's attributed to Carl Linnaeus because in that book was kind of the first time that there was a large group of them put together and laid out in one way.
Well, you also got to think about what year?
1753.
Yeah, I mean, we're still using boats and like hearing from,
yes,
and hearing from somebody on the other side of the world, what, 3 months later,
right,
6 months
oh, yeah,
later? Could you imagine how slow? It's so easy. We take it for granted that we can just, you know, how to pronounce this and have Google just, you know, say it out loud so I'm not embarrassed any more than I have to be. Information's at your fingertips. But, I mean, back then,
right,
yeah, the time between you discovering something and then actually getting it back, getting it into a university, trying to, much less even distribute that information,
right,
back across the pond or whatever the distance that had to be traveled
was. It was months, if not years of time.
I can totally understand why, yeah, you probably had the same oak in lots of different, you know, two different continents or whatever else. And yeah, they were probably known by something entirely different.
Of course. And so also when, you know, dealing with how do we get people from different countries, different nationalities, different languages
to all agree. Oh, I didn't even think about the language.
Exactly. So in order to get everyone to agree and use one name, they had to choose a language that was familiar with everyone. And so they chose Latin, because there essentially could be no bias, you know, even if he was from somewhere in Europe, you know, and someone in Asia felt that there was a European bias, they could agree that let's just use Latin and let's Latinize the names, and now we can all agree on this name without there being any bias.
And I mean, yeah, Latin had probably been in, not that they're, like you were saying, there's not a universal language across, you know, the world yet.
Right.
But if there was going to be one that would be most likely known across different, you know, languages.
Especially at that time, a lot of medicine was in Latin. And so it kind of just made sense that Latin was chosen for this as well. It kind of was an extension of medical taxonomy.
That's crazy.
So when it comes to understanding binomial nomenclature, this two-part naming system for all species.
Based on Latin,
there's two parts. So the first part is the genus, or the generic name. And the second part is the species epithet, or specific name.
Okay, sure.
So the generic name, or genus, is treated as a noun and is capitalized.
Wait, why is it a noun?
Because when it comes to having a name for a creature, whether it be plant or animal.
Oh, a proper place or thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
The genus is a noun, and then the species is treated as an adjective.
Okay.
So, basically, what they did when describing a genus is they picked a noun that best fit everything in that genus, or at least the type species of that genus.
Whatever the noun for spiky plant.
Right, exactly. And then the specific epithet, the species name, was an adjective that further described that genus.
Really, so, really dangerous plant.
Yeah, exactly. So it took it a step further to, you know, if the genus is a generic for all of them, then the species, as an adjective, went that step further.
Sure.
So to describe it from the genus.
Which makes sense. I mean, because you could have one plant, but then a blue one or a red one or a green one, and you may want to, you know, announce those or give those slightly, they're different. It's a blue one versus a red one, but it's also still the same.
Yes.
Yeah, general plant.
And so the generic name is treated as a singular noun and can be named or come from a couple different things. Sometimes it's even just arbitrary. So a lot of the times it is descriptive. Sometimes it can be named after someone. Or sometimes it even was just something random. So a lot of the first ones actually were names after, like, Greek mythology. So the plant had something or looked something like some Greek god, and
yeah,
so they
it was
gave
the tallest
it
tree they had ever seen,
yeah.
So it reached for the sky and therefore got that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times, and especially nowadays, they're descriptive, but across the board, sometimes it was just arbitrarily decided. When it comes to your species name, your species epithet, the epithet is lowercase. So the genus is, the first letter is uppercase, and then the whole word for the species is lowercase because it is describing the genus. If the epithet decided is two words, it must be joined by a hyphen or squished into one word.
Okay.
The epithet, again, can be taken from any source and sometimes is constructed based on an arbitrary manner. So,
can I throw you a curveball?
Okay.
Now, what if the species was after a person? Because then you would want to show them the respect by raising it to uppercase? Or do you still follow the taxonomy rules?
Right. So you still follow the taxonomy rules and it is lowercase. And then if it is in honor of someone, depending on the last letter of their name, it then would get an ending depending on the last letter. So if it ended with an A, it may get an AE. And then how it's decided to be the species name in honor of someone.
So it pulls inspiration from the person it's after, but it still has to follow.
It still has to be Latinized.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, super
cool.
Yeah,
that's kind of weird. And this has been the same since the 1700s.
Yes. So there have been different groups that have come into play when it comes to, like, overseeing the botanical nomenclature. And so there are international groups that oversee the code that have, it's not always yearly meetings, but have meetings every so often years that convene and basically make sure that the world is still in the same page, that when it comes to naming plants, we're all following the same rules, and all new organisms are being created based on these rules.
So assuming you're following all the right rules, do you have the authority to go out there and name something, you know, to follow those rules and then kind of wait to for them to basically tell you you were wrong if that were the case? Or is there more of like an administrative process? Because I'm just thinking to medicine.
Right.
Eventually, it becomes a process by the time we see it in a Walgreens, right? Like it's gone through a lot of regulatory governments and all kinds of things going to it. But also when you're just first experimenting with it and you're putting out the first research paper just saying, hey, we tried to combine these two elements together. We created this thing and this is what we're calling it. You're also kind of just throwing it out there in the dark at first. So there is actually something that there's an organization worldwide that goes back and verifies it?
Yes. So there's an organization that deals with animals, and then there's an organization that deals with plants, fungi, and algae.
Interesting. They include the algae.
Yes. And so there are a couple rules that essentially when describing a new species, you must follow. And also when it comes to describing a new species, you need to describe it in a formal write-up that also includes a specimen of that organism. Okay. And that specimen, if it being a flowering plant, must also include the floral structures. And then once you have that description written up, it must be published in a scholarly journal.
Academic journal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So unless you were to get it published in an article, even if you find a new species, you can't actually give it, or they won't accept it until it is published.
Interesting. Does that make naming new things from the wild harder because you can't bring back? I mean, if you're doing it ethically,
right.
You're not ripping that plant that you found that's one of a kind off the tree you found it in, right?
Well, so botanists and taxonomists, a lot of the time when they are describing a new species that they find in the wild, will take cuttings.
And okay.
In order to, let's say, preserve or persevere the specimen and for the betterment of science,
sure. They
will take the cutting.
And I'm assuming not to harm the original one and all that stuff.
You know, they're not
stuff.
Taking the entire specimen, but they are taking a leaf cutting, they are taking a stem cutting, and they are taking a floral
But you have
piece.
To bring back and be able to produce
Correct.
The specimen in order to have it.
And so that's why there are some plants out there that have cultivar names because they have never been found to have all of the floral structures. So, for example, Philodendron Burlmark's Fantasy. We know that plant as Burlmark's Fantasy because we know kind of where it's from in the wild, but no one's ever been able to find it in the wild with an inflorescence on it. And so because no one has ever found the inflorescence, it can't be described as a new species because we don't have all of the parts.
That's crazy. Yet we all know, as I assume, listeners to this podcast episode, you know exactly what plant we're talking about, going back to my whole Google, or you could just quickly type it into Google and get a picture of it.
Right.
We all know it.
And so Philodendron Burlmark's Fantasy is actually a brand new species that is yet to be described because no one can describe it until we find one with floral characteristics.
Interesting. And there's probably a chance that, like, several other, I would dare even say, man-made cultivars or man-helped cultivars, they're scientifically, taxonomy-wise, they're probably not different. It's not a new species. It's like a mutation of the original one, but you would only know that if you actually got it to go into a flowering state and were able to confirm
Correct.
That.
And I mean, if you know, like, if a spore mutation can be traced back to something in-house or, you know, in a greenhouse setting, or if a cultivar was created through hybridization, then you know that's not a new species. But sometimes these plants are given cultivar names, even though they're no ID species, just because, yeah, we can't give them species names. It would be incorrect based on these governing bodies to just give it a species name without following the steps of describing it and publishing it.
That's crazy. So we can 100% introduce a new plant to the world.
Right.
But we can't just go willy-nilly introducing a new species when we feel like it.
And so this actually happens a lot, unfortunately, in the Hoya realm, where Hoyas sometimes are described or, you know, given species epithet names that are Latinized, so it sounds like a species name, but it hasn't ever been actually described. And so that species name then is technically deemed incorrect or null and void.
And probably where we get some of these weird, the industry or consumers have called something one thing for a decade, and then when science finally does get around to proving the point, all of a sudden, oh, we got to call it something different now that we actually have, you know, described it properly.
Yeah, that's so the one that comes to mind is Hoya gracilis. We're all pretty familiar with Hoya gracilis. Gracilis actually was a species name that was given to it before it was described. And so it now has been described as Hoya memoria, which now is the correct species epithet, memoria, which makes gracilis null and void. It never should have been used. But a lot of times,
everyone knows it.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
And so, you know, the industry a lot of the times is negative in perpetuating misinformation, not only with common names, but now we're looking at scientific names that aren't even true scientific names. It's just, you know, unfortunately, the plant industry moves a lot faster than a lot of these plant taxonomists or just taxonomists in general can keep up with.
And I mean, us growers, we want to be accurate, but we don't have the time. I mean, that's a whole lifetime commitment to being that dedicated to the science that, if you just have a handful of employees and are growing some plants, that's probably not in your repertoire of what you're even able to do.
Well, and at the end of the day, you have to sell the plant as something. You can't call every plant question mark. You know
or
what I mean?
Or plant.
Yeah. Hoya plant, yeah. So, you know, there is a lot of growers try their best.
There's limits of reality, though.
Right.
There's limits of, if you're not in higher education or maybe to people who maybe haven't heard this podcast episode, didn't even know that was the thing, you know, that's very possible. And I think that's both something really cool about our industry, that in some ways there's such a low barrier to entry that you can get started. I mean, we were saying that in like the first couple podcast episodes ever, like if you want to get started, doing something but because that barrier is so low, maybe you didn't have to take at university taxonomy 101 or even just some other plant naming course that just briefly highlighted it, so you're at least familiar with the process. Like, it's very possible you've been working in the industry for several decades and have no idea that this is actually the rule set you're supposed to follow.
Well, and that's exactly what I was just about to say, is it's not always the consumer or the company's fault, let's say, for not following the rules, because when it comes to plant taxonomy and taxonomic code and everything, this isn't necessarily readily available information. There aren't a whole lot of plant taxonomists out there, you know, preaching the good word of follow these rules, you know, do it this way, this is how it should be done. And so because of that, a lot of people in this day and age kind of just have to go off of what they can find out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, think about how many dissertations are written on every topic.
Right.
But what's the chance of, even if it's the best dissertation about that topic, what's your realistic chance of Googling, like, how important is this and finding what could be a wealth of knowledge? But it's hidden behind, or even if it is online, it's not optimized for the search engines to pick up on it. So, you could 100% have even gotten it published. And yet, the first 10 pages of Google would never show it to you.
Yeah,
you know,
it's unfortunate, but you're right.
That's crazy, though. I know you brought in a couple examples that you wanted to kind of go over.
Yeah, so I figured, since we're talking about plant taxonomy, I've, you know, given you some history of plant taxonomy. I've given you understanding how the genus and the species works. Let's apply it to plants that we grow in our greenhouse and have online for sale.
Sweet.
All right, so with that, first let's do Philodendron stenolobum. So I'm going to reach around here. This is Philodendron stenolobum. These are actually grown from seed that we collected and harvested off of our mother plant here at Gabriel Plants. And just look at this plant. So pretty, right?
So good.
I can't believe how big they're getting. Grown from seed, they're actually just over a year old.
Speaking of the summer, those things right? shot up
they
like
are
another
taken
6
off.
Inches.
These actually are buy one, get one free online right now. So if you've ever wanted one of these, not only are they a cool plant, but they are a part of Gabriel Plant's history. Definitely go and snag one of those now. But so, Philodendron stenolobum is the Latin scientific name for this plant. And so the genus, Philodendron, gets its name from philo being love and dendron being tree. So philodendron means tree lover. And it has that name because many philodendron are epiphytes.
Yeah,
so they grow on trees.
Grow.
Exactly. So by being an epiphyte that grows on a tree, and most of the genus have that growth habit, when it was described, it was given that name, philodendron, tree lover.
Philodendrons are the first tree huggers.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And so then the species name, the species epithet, stenolobum, gets the name from steno being narrow and lobum being lobes. So having narrow lobes.
Oh, okay.
And as you can see, stenolobum, especially when compared to many other philodendron, have very narrow lobes compared to a lot of other species. So that's why it was given that specific epithet. So we love that.
That's awesome.
We love understanding the name.
Now, how big does that get?
Oh, well, the mother plant that the seeds came off of here, these their leaves got about 4.5, maybe 5 feet long.
Oh, man.
So
okay.
This has some ways to go.
So maybe not the perfect windowsill plant, but a cool one nonetheless.
Oh, yeah. We love it.
I love that.
All right, well, let's do the
That's
next
so
one.
That's so simple, though. I mean, like, it's... I mean, I failed Latin, but it's so simple that, like, this is not overly complex in a structure.
No.
I think that's the point.
And a lot of these Latin stems mean the same thing across different species. So if you ever see any other plant that has steno in it, steno is narrow. So I would go so far as to say that any other plant that has steno in the name has a trait that has to deal with being narrow in some way.
And of course, we're not the All Living Organisms podcast, but also if you told me there was a specific type of cricket that also shared that, it would make sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it follows the same, which I can imagine, especially before the internet, you know, we're talking 1800s, the fact that you could apply that to whether you were studying medicine, whether you were studying, you know, to be a vet or studying to go into plants, that it's the same. It's not something you're completely unfamiliar with.
Exactly.
Transitioning between the different taxonomy realms. That's crazy.
So cool.
Yeah, I love the consistency. Anytime we can keep the rules the same, I'm a big fan.
Oh, yeah.
It makes life so much simpler.
All right.
Some might even call me stenolobe.
Oh!
Very tall. Very tall and skinny.
I love it. I love it. All right, well, next.
All right, we got some syngonium.
All right, these types that we have here are both cultivars of Syngonium podophyllum. Okay, so this here is Syngonium podophyllum Three Kings, and this is Syngonium podophyllum confetti. Okay, so Syngonium, the genus, gets its name because syn is together or united.
Okay.
And gonium has to deal
with synergy. We have great synergy on
this
podcast. Yeah.
Exactly. And so gonium deals with ovaries. And so Syngonium is given that name because they have fused ovaries on the inflorescence.
Now that you say that, I don't think I've ever seen an inflow, but I'm gonna have to go look that up.
Oh yeah,
that sounds fascinating.
So essentially, the female flowers in the inflorescence of a syngonium are fused, and that sets it apart from a lot of other aroids. And so the genus was given that name, Syngonium.
Interesting.
So then, when it comes to the species name, the species epithet, podophyllum.
What feet or
Podo is feet. Very good. Which you pull from a lot of words that we use even in English, and phyllum is leaf. So basically, foot leafed, but podo actually was originally used for a webbed foot. And okay. So
like a duck.
I have, exactly. So I have an example here. So Syngonium podophyllum is one of many plants that go through maturation, ontogenesis, ontogeny, where the leaf changes as it matures. And so these here are pretty juvenile leaves, just two lobes up here, you know, one leaf. Well, I brought with us, your brother Brad and I took a ladder out and we cut a mature Syngonium podophyllum off of your dad's oak tree.
Okay. Wow.
And so...
Okay, now I'm seeing it a little bit more now.
You can see now that it's mature, it looks like a webbed foot.
Yeah.
It looks like duck's feet. And so that is where it gets the name podophyllum, because of the webbed feet look of the mature form.
That is fascinating.
And so it is just so cool to see not only how they mature, but again, where they get the name.
Do they have a stable amount of lobes that they mature to, or is it kind of leaf by leaf?
So it depends on the species. I could be wrong. Podophyllum does cap out. Let's see, what do we have here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I think podophyllum caps out at 9 or 11, but different
species...
But there
is a cap. It doesn't just keep...
Correct. There is a final form.
Okay, cool. Wow. How high up was that?
Probably 15, 20 feet.
Wow. That's awesome.
Awesome, right?
So cool when you get to see it in its mature form. I think those have always been videos that I think that's what I like when I see Steve's leaves or any of our other friends out there posting like, hey, this is what they get to. And like, whoa. Yeah. Anytime you get to see the glow up story, it's always a great day. What's next?
All right. Well, next. I'm so sorry. I didn't bring an example. But you know what? We can all imagine it. It's a spider plant.
All right. Close your eyes.
About a spider plant. Okay? So spider plant, scientific name is Chlorophytum camosum.
Okay.
So
hopefully we all know. I'm lost on that one. I'm lost.
We all know what a spider plant looks like. Okay. So Chlorophytum, the generic name, gets its name from chloro being green and phytum being plant. So literally... a green plant.
Oh, how original. How original.
So it happened to be the first genus that was original in the fact that it was a green plant.
Oh, I can see the family bickering now. Well, I'm a green plant too. Yep. I was the first green plant.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Chlorophytum is literally just green plant. And so then camosum means long-haired, shaggy, or tufted in regards to the growth habit of a spider plant. They get real big and long, and they look kind of shaggy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They look like a big head of hair.
It's thick, because all those individual leaves pile on top of you. I mean, you could wear it as a good mop wig on the top of your head.
And so it is a long-haired, shaggy, tufted green plant.
So descriptive.
So descriptive.
That's awesome.
Those are things that, you know, it's a really, really common house plant, but that information of what it means isn't really out there.
Sure.
So it's cool to be able to shed light on some of these, you know.
Well, it's one of the things I love most about you is not only do you know all this information, but you know how to say it right. And that's something I just can't say about myself. But
we'll get you there one day.
Yeah, one day. I'm trying.
All right. So next, I have Deschidia ruscifolia. So I actually have two forms here on the table.
I was going to say, one of them looks like a green plant to me.
All right, so I have the variegated form here, and then I have the regular green form here.
So what's this one mean?
All right, so the generic name, Deschidia, I actually could not find information on. But based on the ending of IA, I want to assume that Deschid was someone's name, that it was named after, and then it gave the IA... Ia, in memory of, or essentially the IA is the ending that would be given to a name if the name ended in a consonant. So I couldn't find any information on who Deschid was, but I do want to say, I assume that it was named in honor of someone.
Do you think, would that same rule of being named in honor of someone apply if it was, totally making this up, but if that was some remote island off Madagascar where it was first found, and that was like the proper noun name for that location?
Okay, so that's a great point, because when it comes to species epithets, a lot of the times, if it's not a descriptive word and it's not named in memory of someone, it is named based on where it is from.
Location.
But the ending of a location usually is different.
Okay.
Than just IA. And I don't know of any genera or genus names that are by location. Usually only species names are by a specific location.
But that makes sense, because there's probably way more genus out there,
right,
that are found across multiple continents or multiple states or multiple wherever,
exactly,
compared to, so yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's fascinating, though. So probably a person's name.
Probably a person's name. But this is Deschidia ruscifolia, and so I do have information on where the species epithet comes from. So ruscifolia has two stems. Rusca, which means or is given rusca because it has, so rusca folia. Folia is leaves or foliage. Mm-hmm. So ruscifolia means that it has leaves resembling that of the genus Ruscus. So Ruscus is a genus of flowering plant that have really sharp, thick phylloclades. So phylloclades are modified stems that resemble leaves.
Okay.
And basically they look just like these leaves here.
Where they almost have that like thicker, we've all run into one of those shrubs that just seems to.
Ruscus is actually used a lot for cut foliage in the cut flower industry.
Okay.
So I'm sure you could go to your local floral shop and ask for ruscus and they would have some. Because these are thick, pointy, short, green, and resemble that of the genus Ruscus, it was given the name Ruscifolia.
Interesting. So now we're even broadening it a little bit more, that we're allowed to name a plant that we're referencing a name
another plant.
Of another plant.
Exactly.
Which, like, you're perpetually going down the rabbit trail.
Yes.
And that plant was only given the name because it, you know, before you know it, you're six steps deep.
Yep. And so the genus Ruscus that this is named after was an old Latin name for a prickly plant. So, again, two steps in, but ruscus is prickly plant, ruscifolia, leaves
prickly
of
plant,
a prickly
foliage.
Plant. Yeah, exactly.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, which is super cool.
It's crazy how complicated these things sound.
Right.
And then once you do break them down, you're like, oh, okay, I see how, for the most part,
yeah,
so far.
Pretty simple.
You saw how they got there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as hard to grasp. Still out of my league, but you know, that's a topic for another time, but...
All right. So also I want to plug that all of these plants that we're talking about, we actually do offer for sale on the website. So if any of these really, you know, pick your fancy, definitely check it out. GabrielPlants.com. Search the plant and, we have them available.
That's awesome. Yeah. I know the team's been absolutely killing it this year, and we've had hundreds of plants available at any given time for people to show up. And I was sharing with the team a couple weeks ago that there's no single plant in our entire catalog right now that we have sold more than 3% of the total share of plants we've sold,
wow,
so far this year. So, and that's only like three plants that are even like 2.5 or whatever
close
percent.
To that.
The vast majority are, you know, 1% of what we ship is this plant, and like,
yep,
which is just such a statement to offering. And the fact that everyone wants one of all of these different things, although obviously the bigger plants, you gotta, you know, if you don't have a tree nearby, then your tree hugger may need an artificial one, which we call a moss pole. But, you know, you want to collect one of everything. And it's crazy to see how the variety in which our greenhouse is able to grow. And you've done such an amazing job at making sure that we're caring for each one of these, right? Because we don't even have time to go into it. we're talking about the name right now. We're not talking about how they may need different care. But,
right,
yeah, it was amazing. So definitely check them out, GabrielThePlants.com.
I love it. All right, we have two more.
Okay, two.
All right, so next we're going to talk about, this is a fern. This is an epiphytic fern. This is Aglamorpha coronans. and it's known as the crown fern. And so it actually develops a really cool foot. It's a fuzzy foot. Can you see it in there?
Oh, yeah.
A super fuzzy foot. And so it's a creeping epiphytic fern. And so as it grows, it kind of like creeps along. And then also as it matures, the leaves or the fronds change from like this single frond and they start to get divided. So you see.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
And then once it finds somewhere to climb onto, as it continues to mature, it develops this like nest of fronds against the tree.
Why is that?
Because as an epiphytic fern, once it develops that nest, basically it can catch all fallen leaves and detritus in that nest. And then as those leaves and organic matter break down, all of those nutrients that are being released from the broken down organic matter, it can then collect and use as natural fertilizer.
Fascinating. It's got its own little Venus flytrap thing going
on there. Yeah, exactly. So, Aglomorpha cornans has two names, obviously, a genus and a species. The genus, Aglomorpha, has two stems. Okay, so there's aglo, which is bright, magnificent, pompous, or proud.
Okay.
Okay. And morpha is appearance, shaped, or formed. So basically a magnificently formed plant.
All right.
Okay. A lot of aglomorphas have really cool mature final forms. And so this species, cornans, gets the name, gets the species epithet cornans, which means encircling, garlanding, or crowning, as in wearing a crown. So basically a magnificently formed crowned plant. And so it is called the crown fern because literally when it develops that like nest of fronds around a branch, it develops this like giant outward shaped crown on the tree.
Whoa.
It's really cool looking.
That now you're going to make me want to go put one of those on the tree. That's fascinating. And also goes to show that, I mean, we talk about it sometimes, but when we have to, you know, grow plants at a size, and not just us, the industry, that makes sense to ship, you know, to have logistics on and keep it reasonable in price and all that kind of stuff. It's not every day you get to see all these take their
natural
habitat. So what may seem so kind of crazy to us, when you first found it, though, in its mature form in the middle of a forest somewhere, it made a lot more sense then than maybe it makes right now.
Absolutely.
At mass production scale.
Right, absolutely.
That's crazy.
But so definitely, even if you don't have a lot of ferns in your collection, if you need one fern in your collection, I'd highly recommend Aglomorpha cornans. I love this fern.
That's awesome.
Super cool.
Yeah, I love those fuzzy feet too. Just it's a pleasing thing to rub your finger.
All right, so finally, we have a Hoya. This is Hoya matrata. Okay, so Hoya is, as a genus, got its generic name because it was named after Thomas Hoy.
And so, I did not know that.
Yes, so Thomas Hoy, who lived 1750 to 1822, was a gardener at Sion House for the Duke of Northumberland. And so he played a large role in botany at the time.
Okay.
And so the genus was given that name in honor of him after his passing.
Fascinating.
Hoya... This is matrata. So the species epithet matrata gets its name for meaning turbaned or mitered, which basically is like a headdress.
Okay.
And so by looking at the plant, you wouldn't really understand that. But if you look at the flowers of Hoya matrata, they are held upward away from the plant, unlike most Hoya blooms, which are down.
Yeah.
And so by holding the flowers not only upright and away from the plant, but then they pull the petals all the way, they reflex the petals all the way back. When you see the flowers of Hoya matrata compared to the rest of the plant, it does look like a little headdress, like a turban that this plant is wearing.
Whoa.
Because it is so different from all of the other Hoyas.
Is that the only Hoya that does that?
One of the few that hold it upright.
This is
definitely the most distinguishable.
Sure. Wow. That's crazy. Do you have any information? I'm putting you on the spot of where they found these?
So I believe Hoya matrata is native to Borneo, and if not just Borneo, a lot of like Malaysia, the islands of the Philippines, Indonesia area. Also, fun fact, Hoya matrata is one of three Hoya species that form domadia. So domadia are essentially a modified growth structure that allows or has a mutualistic symbiotic relationship with ant colonies. So what will happen is these leaves, instead of forming in opposite pairs, at a node will form a cluster of usually like six or eight really close together. Yeah. And then if it was in the wild in its natural habitat, in those enclosed areas, those naturally occurring ant colonies would live inside of that as housing protection.
Crazy.
And so only one of three species that will do that.
It produces more covering above, and then its unique characteristic is to face upward, like to put its flowers to face upwards.
Yep.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I know that those are one that I can't recall the person's name, but one of either my dad's friends or somebody had given us a bunch of like no ID or something Hoyas that we were trying to, or they had IDs, but were just like one cutting of each one and different things. So it took us quite a long time to get from the two different cuttings I had. But it's one of my favorite just in the, because its leaves can get, when it does that six leaf cluster thing, it looks cool. It also makes it really difficult to water them, but like it is unique. And I would have never imagined that was unique enough though to be something completely unique to such a few group of Hoya.
You
know, because there's a lot of Hoya out there. If there's anything I've learned in the last 12 months is that
there are a lot
the
of
number
Hoya.
Of Hoyas are endless when you think you know it all. But I guess that's with anything in life, though.
Exactly.
You're so excited when you learn something new until you realize all the things that now it makes you question about how much you know about everything else or however that may play out, which that's fascinating, though, that they have such a unique way of doing that, because it is quite bothering to try to water it with the whole oak.
So I do want to plug that a lot of this information when it comes to specific epithets and everything and understanding this information, I do want to plug this book. I live by this book. This is The Names of Plants by David Gledhill. This essentially is basically a dictionary to all different species epithets. So if you're interested in plant taxonomy at all, definitely go ahead and check this book out. It has been such a lifesaver in being able to kind of understand a little bit more this world of plant taxonomy.
That's crazy. Do they have to update those books quite often? Like, are they
on
the 19th edition?
Yeah, so this is the fourth edition.
Fourth edition, yeah. Okay. Well, I can imagine it doesn't change a whole lot. And like we said, a lot of that taxonomy is also something that's used in other industries besides plants too. So there's some general knowledge, I'm sure you can learn more. That's crazy, though. Brett, I appreciate so much you bringing those plants in. So I also know, before we go, like we said, you had a special announcement, because I know that this topic of taxonomy is something very near and dear to your heart. So you had a reason for talking about this particular topic on today's podcast. You want to share that now?
Yes. So I've always loved plant taxonomy, and...
Well, it's pretty obvious. I mean, anyone who just listened to the last 45 minutes...
And it's always held a special place in my heart. And when I was going through undergraduate, my professors always told me that kind of the fact out there is botanists say that 20% of the plants in the world have yet to be discovered.
Right.
And there are very few people out there who have the education that they need to be able to be the ones to describe plants. And go into plant taxonomy and be plant taxonomists.
And find new plants.
Because unfortunately, we as humanity, the world is burning, and a lot of these places where these rare undescribed plants are, the habitats are being destroyed.
You can't guarantee they're going to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I've always felt that if we didn't know, or if we didn't know who was going to be describing these species and discovering these species, then why not me? And so I would like to share that I have been accepted to graduate school, where I will be getting a Master's of Science in Plant and Fungal Taxonomy, Diversity, and Conservation.
That is so awesome. And this has been something that obviously we've been working through for the past couple months, and we want to find a way to share it with people. And when I first threw out the idea, like, hey, why don't we like explain exactly why you're so passionate about doing this? Because as you told me, that was some of the first things you ever told me, it was like, yeah, but we just don't even know what else is out there. And yeah, especially with how the world is going these days, you can't be guaranteed it's going to be there. But that's awesome. Where exactly are you going to be studying, and when are you going to make that big jump?
So it's a it's a one-year program at Queen Mary University of London.
Okay,
in the UK. Yep. And the program starts mid-September of this year.
Wow. Okay. So just a couple weeks, months away at this point. That's crazy. What are you looking forward to most? Like, what made you want to go there and study there?
So when I was a senior at Ferrum College, which is where I got my undergraduate degree, senior year in my honors capstone course, I was tasked with creating a 10-year plan. And in that 10-year plan, I was looking up, you know, what do I want to do with this? You know, I graduated from Ferrum with a Bachelor's of Science in Horticulture and Agribusiness. But even back then in 2015, I had this desire to be in the wild, be in the jungle, and discover these plants. And so I was looking, how can I take this further? How can I help accomplish this goal? And so it was back then in 2015 that I found this program at Queen Mary University of London.
Even before you were here?
Before I was here. Before I even graduated undergrad,
wow,
I knew of this program. And so that's where my sights had been set. And so, you know, after graduating, I moved down to South Florida. I was working as a wholesale broker. And then from there, I joined the team here at Gabriel Plants. And this was just the next step.
Yeah, I have to say, though, it's obviously incredibly sad to see you go, because there's no ability to replace you. I've joked about it several times, but our plant names and our education goes back definitely a step. But I also know that you're one of those people who, this won't be the last time you're on a podcast, this won't be the last time that people on our team, who really, we're a huge family here. So it's been cool to see other people who have come and gone over the years. In fact, the other day I showed up here to the greenhouses, and a former employee just decided to stop by on his lunch break just to hang out with people who are still friends that work on the team. And I know all of us feel the same way about you. It's super sad news to see you go, but also I couldn't be more proud of you for pursuing the thing that I know has been in your heart for so long, because that, not everyone's ready to do that, especially when you told me you were going to be going across the pond, and that was, I mean, that's a whole different, moving, you know, couple cities over is not no big deal, but I can't even imagine the amount of logistics that will take and everything. And I can't imagine a better way for you to for you to be able to do exactly what you want to do. And there's no better time than right now for anybody to do anything that their heart is really set for. Why keep making the excuse? You know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And so not only is this an amazing opportunity and this program is phenomenal, but this school is in partnership, and this program is in partnership with Kew Royal Botanic Garden, which is over in London.
Yeah.
And so for part of this program, we will be studying at the research station in Madagascar.
So you're actually going to get to go and find some new plants.
Yes. And so when dealing with the Masters of Science, you need to do a thesis. And so the thesis can be either analytics-based, research-based, or field-based. And so I plan on doing a field-based research, or field-based master's thesis in Madagascar. And
okay, well, make me this promise then. I won't bother you a lot while you're in school, because I realize, especially a one-year program, that's got to be
jam-packed.
Yeah, jam-packed. But whenever you finish that master thesis, you need to come share what you found, because I need to know.
I love it.
I need to know.
I'm all for it. Just thinking about, we're doing a podcast right now on plant taxonomy, and I haven't even begun my taxonomy courses yet. I'm thinking of how embarrassed I'm going to be listening to this a year from now once I finish the presentation or finish the thesis, and being like, oh, little Brett knew, little, juvenile plant taxonomist Brett knew nothing. So.
Which is crazy, because I'm over here going man, he's so smart, he knows so much more than I do already. What do you, obviously to go find new plants is your dream. What do you think you have the most to learn about that? If you had to, speaking of judging yourself a year from now, what do you think you have the most to learn?
Well, definitely I want to learn and hone my skills in describing the new species. It's one thing to know what the name of a plant means, but to be able to use the correct botanical terminology to write up a description, like a formal description that you need to describe the new species, I know uses a lot of botanical terminology that I don't currently, you know, I'm not an expert at.
So almost learning the lexicon.
Yes.
Of what the future job would be. That's awesome. Do you have a goal of how many plants you want to go find? Is there a record for how many plants somebody has found?
I don't know if there's a record. I'm sure it's lots of them.
I imagine in the 1700s and far less were out there described. You got more bang for your buck when you showed up in a random forest somewhere.
I definitely look forward to having plants named after me. I look forward to naming a plant after my mom, and I look forward to naming a plant after Kesha. So
that is
definitely goals I have as a plant taxonomist.
All right, when you listen back a couple years from now to this, you got to keep true to that.
Oh, yeah.
I need to know when it happens. And I don't think I can ever put to words how much, like, it was crazy when you first brought this news to me, because you're like, there's just so much more to learn. I want to learn all this. I don't know all this. And I'm over here like, but you brought this entire company into an era that was so much more than anything my dad or I ever knew. I mean, from launching a breeding program to having the way that we used, you know, the set and the podcast in different ways to educate customers in a way, much like this podcast episode itself, that, like, I wouldn't have been able to come together with that much things, and I definitely wouldn't have pronounced it all right. So it's crazy to see how much impact you've had in the short time you were here. And not that it was short, but I mean, in grand scheme of your life, this is such an honor to know you for such a small chapter of that. And it's going to be so cool to see what you do eventually. So when people, obviously you're going to learn all kinds of stuff and you're not going to shy away. You're an educator born in, like, that's you. So if people want to continue to follow along with your story while you're over there, Instagram handle, how do people stay up with everything?
Yeah, so definitely follow along my story. Instagram, it's Brett, 2 T's, with plants. So BrettWithPlants, Brett with plants on Instagram. I plan on definitely documenting my journey on there.
And I'm sure that if you run across a mature form of something maybe we're growing, tag the company in there too, so we can share that again. Because I know people, much like myself, there's no way to say bye to Brett. It's just see you later, you know? But you're going to go on and do some really great things. I can't be more thankful for all you've taught me. You've stretched me to be a better leader. I've seen you grow into somebody who came in as, you know, knowing the industry, but knowing it from very one side. There was a lot to learn, you know, doing day-to-day greenhouse operations versus, you know, what you had done previously. And I know even this next chapter is going to be the same thing. You know, you kind of go, but it's like becoming a ninth grader again.
Right.
You're the lowest on the totem. Eighth grade, you're the highest on the totem pole. And the ninth grade, you're right back down. But if there's anything I've seen you do the entire time I've known you, including the multiple years before you ever landed with the company, you're going to excel and do some really cool stuff. So I just can't say thank you enough for everything you've taught me, what you've taught this team, the opportunities you've given our customers to learn something new. And I'm pre-thanking you on behalf of the plant community for all you're going to do for pushing the industry and plants forward and making sure that those plants that maybe are going to be extinct in it, you know, the next couple centuries, that their stories aren't forgotten. Because every plant has a story is definitely something that you were inspirational in making a Gabriella thing, but I see that continuing to be something you carry on as, like, a life motto forever.
Absolutely.
Because you just want to tell those stories.
And not only through Gabriella do we say every plant has a story, but also through Gabriella, we're always growing more. And I've definitely taken that to heart as a person, because we are always growing more.
Yeah, and amazing. So, again, we could go on for hours of just, it's never easy to say goodbye, but like I said, it's not goodbye. It's we'll talk soon. It just may not be in the same room, you know, this many feet across, but we'll find a way to get you on the podcast in future weeks. And I do have plans for what we can do. I want to be able to highlight the team more. We've talked about this. Again, there's no replacing you, but I do think that you've done such a great job at setting us up to be able to continue to take care of our customers well, and to continue to push the bar. If you're going to be always growing more, we're going to still have to find ways to keep doing that too. So
absolutely.
I don't know every answer, but I'm excited for the new chapter for both of us for sure. With that, anything else you have to say?
I'm thankful for all the opportunities that, you know, this company has blessed me with. And yeah, like you said, this isn't the end, you know, it's just a new chapter.
And I need to see that master's thesis. So definitely shoot it my way when it gets finished, you know, just no work between here and then for you or anything like that. But thank you so much for listening with that to this episode, very special edition of the Every Plant Story podcast. You can follow Brett at
Brett with Plants on Instagram.
And you can follow the company, Gabriella Plants, on Instagram at Gabriella Plants Online. You can shop on our website, Gabriella Plants. And with that, thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you guys soon.
Bye.
If you have a question for Shane or the podcast crew, you can always email them to podcast@gabriellaplants.com for a chance for your question to be answered in an upcoming podcast episode. Send your questions to podcast@gabriellaplants.com. Looking for your next houseplant on a budget? We have one of the widest selections available at gabriellaplants.com with hundreds of options grown just for you and ready to ship directly from our greenhouse to your house.